topic for tonight is how to conquer worry and anxiety. Raise your hand if you've ever worried about anything during your life, okay? Okay, that's 100%. Very good. Worry is certainly part of our life, isn't it? We worry about a lot of different things, sometimes about our future. Well, the good news is that 85% of what we worry about is never going to happen. Mark Twain once said, he says, "I am an old man, and I have known a great many troubles, most of which have never happened." Isn't the case that 85% of what we worry about will never occur? So tonight we want to talk about how to conquer worry and anxiety. Let me begin by reading a passage from the Sermon on the Mount. I'm sure all of you are familiar with this wonderful passage. Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink, nor about your body, what you should put on. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds of the air. They neither sow nor reap, nor gather into barns. And yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not of more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add one cubit to his span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O men of little faith? Therefore do not be anxious, saying, 'What shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?' For the Gentiles seek all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things shall be yours as well. Therefore do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let the day's own trouble be sufficient for the day." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. Well, I found a couple good quotes about worry. One author says, "Today is the tomorrow you worried about yesterday." Another one is, "Worry, definition of worry, worry is the interest paid on trouble before it falls due." Well, another definition of worry is negative goal setting, right? See, all of us like to set goals. Worry is negative goal setting. Somebody once says, "Worry is like a rocking chair. It will give you something to do, but it won't get you anywhere." One of my best definitions I found is, "Worry is a minor form of atheism." Okay, excellent question. Sometimes a person will need to seek professional counseling. Just like if you broke your leg, you would go to a doctor. So if somebody has a broken heart or difficulties, chemical imbalances in the brain which are causing some sort of depression, they should get, go to a good counselor. I would recommend a good Catholic counselor, a good Christian counselor. That would be, I would say, very important. If somebody does have these issues, sometimes they can't really cure them through just some of these ideas. However, I would say that 90% of the people would be helped by a book like this. However, there are maybe 10% that will have more serious issues of chemical depression and other things. So I would definitely recommend seeking good advice from professionals and good counselors. See, there's a lot of different ways to look at a problem. One is to try to combat it spiritually by going to confession, going to Mass, receiving communion as often as you can, praying the rosary. So grace can change a person. Tonight, most of my talk was based upon things we can do naturally. See, we have the order of nature and we have the order of grace. But as Thomas Aquinas says, grace builds on nature. So if we can get some of these basics down, like thinking good, wholesome, positive thoughts, not dwelling upon the negative, staying busy, visiting people that are worse off than ourselves, helping the poor, helping the needy. See, these natural things can oftentimes be the answer. But realize that God's grace is much more powerful, and God's grace can transform us through healing, through the sacraments, confession, anointing of the sick, and things like that. So realize grace builds upon nature. A lot of what I said has to do with the order of nature, but I'm not in any way diminishing the order of grace, because the power of the sacraments and prayer can completely transform a life. Going to healing masses and things like that are very good. So some people might need some counseling or spiritual direction from a priest. Others might need to go in the psychological route through medicine and psychological counseling. Others, I think, have just gotten into bad habits, like always looking about the glass as half empty rather than half full. And so I would say for each person, you have to look into your heart and think, well, can I solve my problems with God's help? Or does God, you know, want me to also, you know, maybe do some professional counseling as well if the issues are serious? So sometimes that's needed as well. So that's a great question. Anybody else? Here's one. The only thing that can be done today that should be put off until tomorrow, worry. The only thing that can be done today that should be put off till tomorrow. Another author says, worry kills more people than work, because more people worry than work. So we have some good advice from these different people on the importance of not worrying. Now, I Xeroxed for you a few pages. Hopefully all of you have this or can share. Does everybody have a copy of the handout? Okay. Can all of you share? Can you pass them out so everybody can at least look upon them? Okay. What we'll do is go through this. These passages are from this book, which is the very best book ever written on how not to worry, okay? And then how many of you read this book? Nobody. This should be mandatory reading in every college or every high school, called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living by Dale Carnegie. I've read this maybe 7-8 times. I try to read it once a year or every other year, and I've done this for maybe the past 10 years or so. This is one of the most amazing books you'll ever read, and what I did was at the end of every chapter, he has a summary. And so I decided to give you copies of the summary for, you know, 6 of the chapters that have to deal with worry. Let's take a look at them. Rule number 1, facts you should know about worry. If you want to avoid worry, do what Sir William Osler did. Live in day-tight compartments. You know what day-tight compartments are? Like in the Titanic, when one of the areas gets filled with water, they would shut that off, and so that the water wouldn't come into the next section. Well, it didn't work in the Titanic, but for most boats, it'll work because they could shut off the water, and then that would keep the other areas safe. So Sir William Osler recommends to live in day-tight compartments, and the 3 compartments of our life are the past, the present, and the future. So what you want to do is live in the present. People who live too much in the past or too much in the future will have difficulties. The best way to overcome worry, he says, is to live in day-tight compartments. Use what AA has as their motto, one day at a time. Okay? So write that down, one day at a time. Don't stew about the future. Just live each day. They say that the present is God's gift to us. That's why it's called a present, right? So it is a special gift that we have. So many people water last year's crops. They've come and gone. A lot of what people worry about is the past. A lot of what people worry about is the future. But one of the secrets to not worrying is to try to focus on the present, on today, and live each day to the best of your ability. Rule number 2, the next time trouble with a capital T backs you into a corner, try the magic formula of Willis Carrier. Number 1, ask yourself, what is the worst thing that can possibly happen if I can't solve this problem? So look at the worst case scenario first. 2, prepare yourself mentally to accept the worst if necessary. And then 3, calmly try to improve upon the worst, which you have already mentally agreed to accept. So take action. Try to improve the worst case scenario. There's a pretty amazing story I found in this book about a man who was pretty near death because he worried so much. It says, here is a story of Earl Haney of Winchester, Massachusetts. He told this story to us at this conference on November 17, 1948 at the Hotel Statler in Boston. He says, back in the 20s, I was so worried that ulcers began eating the lining of my stomach. One night I had a terrible hemorrhage. I was rushed to the hospital, connected with the School of Medicine of Northwestern University in Chicago. My weight dropped from 175 pounds to 90 pounds. I was so ill, I could not even lift my hand. Three doctors, including a celebrated ulcer specialist, said my case was incurable. I lived on alkaline powders and a tablespoon of half a milk and half cream every hour. This went on for months. Finally, I said to myself, look here, Earl Haney, if you have nothing to look forward to except lingering death, you might as well make the most of the little time you have left. You have always wanted to travel around the world before you die, so if you're going to do it, you might as well do it now. I told my physicians I was going to travel around the world. They were shocked. Impossible, they said. They'd never heard of such a thing. They warned me that if I started around the world, I would be buried at sea. No, I won't, they replied. I have promised my relatives I'll be buried in my family plot in Nebraska, so I'm going to take my casket with me. I arranged for a casket, put it aboard the ship, and then made arrangements with the steamship company in the event of my death to put my corpse in a freezing compartment and keep it there until the liner returned home. I set out on my trip. The moment I boarded the SS President Adams in Los Angeles and headed for the Orient, I felt better. I gradually gave up my alkaline powders. I soon began eating all kinds of food, even strange native mixtures and concoctions that were guaranteed to kill me. As the weeks went by, I even smoked long cigars and drank highballs. I enjoyed myself more than I had in years. We ran into monsoons and typhoons, which should have put me in my casket, if only from fright, but I got an enormous kick out of all this adventure. I played games aboard the ship, sang songs, made new friends, stayed up half the night. When we reached China and India, I realized that the business cares I had faced back home were paradise compared to the poverty and hunger in the Orient. I stopped all my senseless worrying and felt fine. When I got back to America, I gained 90 pounds and almost forgotten I ever had a stomach ulcer. I never felt better in my life. I went back to business and haven't been ill a day since. Earl Haney told me how he realizes now he was unconsciously using the principles of William Carrier to conquer worry. First, I asked myself, what's the worst thing that could possibly happen? The answer was death. Second, I prepared myself to accept death. I had to. There was no choice. The doctor said my case was hopeless. Third, I tried to improve the situation by getting the utmost enjoyment out of life for the short time I had left. If he continued, if I had gone on worrying about boarding that ship, I have no doubt that it would have made my return voyage inside my coffin. But I relaxed, I forgot all my troubles, and this calmness of mind gave me a new burst of energy that actually saved my life. So rule number two, apply this magical formula. Number one, ask yourself what's the worst thing that could possibly happen. Number two, prepare to accept it if you have to. Number three, calmly proceed to improve on the worst. So rule number three, remind yourself of the exorbitant price you can pay for worry in terms of your health. Those who do not know how to fight worry die young. See, worry can certainly affect a person's health, as you know. A person can worry themselves sick. There was a really neat story here about General Grant during the Civil War. He says, Grant had been besieging Richmond for 9 months. General Lee's troops, ragged and hungry, were beaten. Entire regiments were deserting at a time. Others were holding prayer meetings in their tents, shouting, weeping, and seeing visions. The end was close. Lee's men set fire to the cotton and tobacco warehouses in Richmond, burned the arsenal, and fled from the city at night, while towering flames roared up into darkness. Grant was in hot pursuit, banging away at the Confederates from both sides, while Sheridan's cavalry was heading them off in front, tearing up railway lines and capturing supply trains. Grant, half blind with a violent, sick headache, fell behind his army and stopped at a farmhouse. I spent the night, he records in his memoirs, bathing my feet in hot water and mustard and putting mustard plasters on my wrists in the back part of my neck, hoping to be cured by morning. The next morning, he was instantly cured. And the thing that cured him was not the mustard plaster, but a horseman galloping down the road with a letter from Lee saying he wanted to surrender. When the officer bearing the message reached me, Grant wrote, I was still suffering with this sick headache, but the instant I saw the contents of the note, I was cured. Isn't that amazing that just one idea or this one event completely can change somebody from being sick with terrible headaches to being instantly cured? So realize what worry can do to you. So number three says, those who do not know how to fight worry die young. Now take a look at part two. This is the basic techniques for analyzing worry. Number one, get the facts. Remember that Dean Hawks of Columbia University said that half the worry in the world is caused by people trying to make decisions before they have sufficient knowledge on which to base a decision. So get all the facts. Number two, weigh them carefully and then come to a decision. Number three, once you reach a decision, act. See, one of the keys to overcoming worry is to stay busy and to act. The problem is people think too much about themselves. They think about their own problems, their own difficulties. What they need to do is to start thinking about others and to, what I recommend is find somebody that's worse off than you and help them. Like go to a nursing home and visit the elderly, go to a hospital, visit them, try to maybe do some, you know, prison work, visiting the juveniles, delinquents in prison, to try to find people who are having more difficulties than yourself and try to help them. The best way to overcome worry is to forget about yourself and think more about others. A good analogy, I think, is if you're driving your car, you have to be looking out through the windshield. If somebody is always looking in the rearview mirror at themselves, what's going to happen? They're going to go off the road into a ditch and probably crash. We get into trouble when we start focusing too much on ourselves and not enough on God and on others. So just keep that in mind. So stay busy and try to help others as best you can. So it says, get busy carrying out your decision. Dismiss all anxiety about the outcome. There's a really neat story about Longfellow. Just a couple sentences here. It says that any psychiatrist will tell you that work, keeping busy, is one of the best anesthetics ever known for sick nerves. Henry Longfellow found out for himself when he lost his young wife. His wife had been melting some sealing wax at a candle one day while her clothes caught on fire. Longfellow heard her cries and tried to reach her in time, but she died from the burns. For a while, Longfellow was so tortured by the memory of that dreadful experience, he nearly went insane. But fortunately for him, his three small children needed his attention. In spite of his own grief, Longfellow undertook to be father and mother to the children. He took them for walks, told them stories, played games with them, immortalized their companionship in the poem, The Children's Hour. He translated Dante, and all these duties he combined with keeping so busy, he forgot himself entirely and regained his peace of mind. Because the key to happiness is to forget yourself, to focus on God and others. As Tennyson declared when he lost his intimate friend, Arthur Hallam, I must lose myself in action, lest I wither in despair. I think so many times people do fall into the trap of being too self-focused. In a sense, they sort of drown under the sorrow of their own problems. And so what happens if we think too much about ourselves, we tend to sink, we tend to drown. But if you think about others, loving God, serving God, helping others, it makes a huge difference. Number four, it says, when you or any of your associates are tempted to worry about a problem, write out the answer to these following questions. And the key here is to write it out. Take a piece of paper and a pen and sit down and write out these four questions. And try to solve your problem by saying, first of all, what is the problem? Number two, what is the cause of the problem? Number three, what are all the possible solutions? Number four, what is the best solution? I'm sure a lot of you have worries about your future. You know, is God calling you to become a priest or a nun or to get married or remain single? Is God calling you to marry this particular person, this particular man, this particular woman? What kind of job does God want you to have? Does he want you to become a lawyer, doctor, teacher, a business professional? What are those choices that you have? So write down on a piece of paper, well, what is the problem? And then, if you have a difficulty, what is the cause of the problem? Maybe you have a problem with a relationship. Maybe it's with your dad, with your mom. So try to write down, what is the problem exactly? What's the cause of the problem? Is it your fault? Is it their fault? What are all the possible solutions? Should you go apologize? Should you just pray? Should you ignore it? Should you forgive? Write down all the possible solutions. And then number four, pick the best solution and then act upon it. Next page, how to break the worry habit before it breaks you. Rule number one, crowd out worry from your mind by keeping busy. As I mentioned, plenty of action is one of the best therapies. Number two, don't fuss about trifles. There's a whole book out called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff. And then the subtitle is, and it's all small stuff. So just keep that in mind. If you can try to do this, don't sweat the small stuff. Don't permit little things, the termites of life, to ruin your happiness. Isn't that the case that usually it's not the big things? Oftentimes it's the little things that can make our life very difficult, the termites of life. As I said, there was a great story in here about some of those trees out in California, like the General Sherman tree or something like that. These huge trees that have been around for like 400 years, and this one tree died, and so they looked at the history of this tree, and they could tell when they cut the rings that it had survived lightning and fires and all sorts of things. But what brought down this big tree were termites. These little tiny, minuscule, microscopic bugs were able to bring down this huge tree, whereas storms and monsoons weren't able to bring it down. So, number two, don't fuss about trifles. Don't let the little things in life, the termites of life, ruin your happiness. Number three, use the law of averages to outlaw your worries. Ask yourself, what are the odds against this thing happening at all? See, we worry about when you fly on a plane, is this plane going to crash, okay? If they drive on the beltway, we're going to get in an accident. Ask yourself, what are the odds that this is going to happen? So make use of the law of averages. And there's a neat little story here, a couple sentences about the law of averages. It had to do in World War II. This fellow in 1944 was lying on his trench near Omaha Beach. I was in the signal service company. I just dug in at Normandy. As I looked at that trench, a rectangular hole in the ground, I said to myself, this looks just like a grave. When I laid down and tried to sleep in it, it felt like a grave. I couldn't help myself thinking, maybe this is my grave. When the German bombers began coming over at 11 p.m., the bombs started falling. I was scared to death. For the first two or three nights, I couldn't sleep at all. By the fourth or fifth night, I was almost a nervous wreck. I knew that if I didn't do something, I would go crazy. So I reminded myself that five nights had passed and I was still alive, and so was every man in our outfit. Only two had ever been injured, and they had been hurt not by a German bomb, but by falling flak from our own anti-aircraft guns. I decided to stop worrying and do something constructive. So I built a thick wooden roof over my trench to protect myself from flak. I thought of the vast area over which my unit was spread. I told myself that the only way I could be killed in that deep, narrow trench was by a direct hit. And I figured out that the chance of a direct hit on me was not 1 in 10,000. After a couple of nights of looking at it this way, I calmed down and slept even through the bomb raid. So use that technique, thinking, well, what are the chances that this particular plane is going to crash out of the thousands of planes in the air today? Or ask yourself, what are the law of averages? What's the chance of this actually happening? Like, what's the chance of you actually getting cancer? Very, very minuscule. Okay, next. Number four, cooperate with the inevitable. If you know a circumstance is beyond your power to change or revise, say to yourself, it is so, it cannot be otherwise. In other words, accept what you cannot change. And there's a prayer called the Serenity Prayer. How many of you have heard of that, the Serenity Prayer? I forget how it goes. I know it's in this book somewhere, but it's like, Lord, grant me the grace to what? Accept what I cannot change change what I can change and the wisdom to know the difference, something like that. You get the idea. So you might want to just jot that down to try to remember it, that serenity prayer. Lord, grant me the grace to accept what I cannot change, the power to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. That's a wonderful prayer. Number 5, put a stop-loss order on your worries. Decide just how much anxiety a thing may be worth and refuse to give it any more. For example, let's say you break up with your boyfriend or your girlfriend and you think, oh, I'm so depressed. Well, think to yourself, well, I'm going to set a limit. I'm going to be depressed for 3 days and then I'm going to stop being depressed. So keep that in mind. Try to set yourself, you know, a deadline saying, 3 days or whatever, 3 hours, 3 minutes, whatever you can come up with. I'm going to be depressed for 3 minutes. Okay, ready? Number 6, let the past bury its dead. Don't saw sawdust. Isn't that the case? We do that, you know, we water last year's crops. We don't let the dead bury the dead. We tend to saw sawdust, and that doesn't do any good. Here's a neat paragraph about a boxer from the 1920s, Jack Dempsey. Dale Carnegie says, I had dinner with Jack Dempsey one Thanksgiving. He told me over turkey and cranberry sauce about the fight in which he lost the heavyweight championship to Jim Tunney. Naturally, it was a blow to his ego. In the midst of that fight, he told me, I suddenly realized I'd become an old man. At the end of the 10th round, I was still on my feet, but that was about all. My face was puffed and cut, and my eyes were nearly closed. I saw the referee raise Gene Tunney's hand in token of victory. I was no longer the champion of the world. I started back in the rain, back through the crowd to my dressing room. As I passed, some people grabbed my hand. Others had tears in their eyes. A year later, I fought Tunney again, but it was no use. I was through forever. It was hard to keep from worrying about it all, but I said to myself, I'm not going to live in the past or cry over spilt milk. I'm going to take this blow in the chin and not let it floor me. And that is precisely what Jack Dempsey did. How? By saying to himself over and over, I won't worry about the past. No, that would merely have forced him to think about his past worries. He did it by accepting and writing off his defeat and concentrating on plans for the future. So make sure you have goals. Make sure you have plans for the future. He did it by opening the Jack Dempsey restaurant on Broadway and the Great Northern Hotel on 57th Street. He did it by promoting prize fights and giving boxing exhibitions. He did it by getting so busy on something constructed that he had neither the time nor the temptation to worry about the past. Jack Dempsey said, I have had a better time during the last 10 years than I had when I was a champion. So keep that in mind as well, that so many times we try to saw sawdust, we think about the past, but it's best to move on. Part 4 here, it says, 7 ways to cultivate a mental attitude that will bring you peace and happiness. Number 1, fill our minds with thoughts of peace, courage, health, and hope, for our life is what our thoughts make of it. One of the best books you can ever find is called As a Man Thinketh by a guy named James Allen. You can buy it at a bookstore. It's about maybe 50 pages, As a Man Thinketh. And the main point in that book is we always move in the direction of our thoughts. See, our thoughts eventually lead to words and actions. But if you can keep your thoughts good and holy, then your life will be good and holy as well. If you keep your thoughts positive and optimistic and filled with peace, hope, love, and joy, then your life will move in that direction. Earl Nightingale once said, we become what we think about. Whatever the mind dwells upon, we move in that direction. For example, bank robbers, they think about robbing a bank. Well, they eventually, you know, they dwell upon it. They think, well, how can I do this? And they move in that direction. Other people will, everybody moves in the direction of their thoughts. People like Mother Teresa, Pope John Paul II, the great saints of this modern era, always kept their thoughts good and holy, and they moved in that direction. You know, everything begins with a thought. I mean, this beautiful chapel of Robert Bellarmine began with a thought in Father Bob's mind. He wanted to build a chapel. He got an architect, and everything begins with thought. First of all, the architect conceives an idea, then they put it in a blueprint, and then they give the blueprints to construction companies, and they build it. But everything first begins with a thought. the Empire State Building, the Golden Gate Bridge, any major building, something like the U.S. Capitol or the Washington Monument, at first were all an idea conceived in the mind, and then it becomes reality. It begins to take fruit and implement itself. So if you want to be peaceful and filled with health and life and hope, it says keep your thoughts on the right track. It's an amazing thing that if people, see, most people, they spend all their time thinking about the negative things. They think about their worries and all the problems they have in life and how much money they don't have and how much they'd rather have this or that. But the key is to keep your mind focused on the blessings that you have, all the good things that God has given you. So keep your mind on those things, and then you'll move in the direction of your thoughts. We all move in the direction of our thoughts, for good or for bad. Every sin begins first in the thought. When a guy sees a woman, says, you know, the guy's at work, and he sees a secretary, and he begins thinking, oh, about adulterous thoughts. If he continues to dwell upon them and cultivate them and harbor them, his life will move in that direction. That's the key to avoiding temptation, is to get rid of the bad thoughts right away. If you get a bad thought in your head, say a prayer. Say an Our Father, Hail Mary, to keep your thoughts good and holy, and then your life will move in that direction. It's a secret to all virtue. Earl Nightingale says that our mind is like a garden, and our thoughts are the seeds that we plant in the garden. If you planted poison ivy seeds, you're going to get poison ivy plants. If you plant, let's say, roses or vegetables or flowers, if you plant those in seed form, they will grow. So keep that in mind, that all of our thoughts are like seeds that we plant in the fertile garden of our mind, and we will eventually reap what we sow. The Lord said that as well. As you sow, so shall you reap. Whatever we reap in the garden of our mind will eventually come forth in words or actions. Rule number two, never try to get even with your enemies, because if we do, we will hurt ourselves far more than we hurt them. Let's do what General Eisenhower does. Let's never waste a minute thinking about people we don't like. Realize in the Bible, God says, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. So the key is don't take revenge, forgive, and you'll be much more at peace. And even if you have a tough time forgiving, think, well, that person doesn't deserve forgiveness. Even if you don't forgive for their sake, forgive for your sake. Okay, a person who's unforgiving is like a person who's holding hot barbecue coals in their hand. And they can be so upset, but what they need to do is just let it go and stop burning themselves. They will get more out of forgiving. They will benefit more by forgiving than the person who is being forgiven. So just pray about that as well. If there's somebody that you're not forgiving, don't hold that, because if you are holding that unforgiveness, that person still has control over your life. But the best thing to do is just drop the hot coals out of your hand, forgive and forget, and God can heal you emotionally. Well, 10 lepers in one day, but only one thanked him. Why should we expect more gratitude than Jesus got? That's a great thought, isn't it? He healed 10 lepers, only one came back to thank him. So when, like, you do something for a friend and they don't thank you, don't get upset about it. Just say, that's the way it goes. You know, Jesus cured 10 lepers. Only one of them, 10%, came back to thank him. So why should we expect more than even the Lord got? B, let's remember that the only way to find happiness is not to expect gratitude, but to give for the joy of giving. Who's heard of the prayer of St. Francis? Prayer of St. Francis. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is injury, let me sow pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is sadness, joy. Where there is despair, hope. Lord, grant that I may not so much to seek to be consoled as to console, to be loved and to love. For it is giving that, it's in giving that we receive, it's in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it's in dying that we are born into eternal life. So if you want to receive more peace and happiness in your life, then use the philosophy of St. Francis. Don't expect gratitude. Just give for the joy of giving. Try to do things for people that can't repay you. Do acts of kindness. C, let's remember that gratitude is cultivated. If we want our children to be grateful, we must train them to be grateful. Number four, count your blessings, not your troubles. This is a great one. So many times we focus on our troubles in life, like people can look out the window and instead of seeing the beautiful sunset or the mountains or the trees, they look at the little specks on the window and the flies on the window rather than looking through to see the magnificent scenery. There was a great quote in here, if I can remember it correctly, it said, two men looked out from prison bars, like one saw the mud, the other saw the stars. So keep your mind focused on your blessings in life. And did you all know that all of you are multimillionaires? Did you all know that? Actually, most of you are billionaires. Imagine if somebody said to you, I will give you, let's say, $10,000, but we'll have to cut off your right arm. Would any of you give $10,000 to be only have one arm left? I doubt it. How about somebody says, well, I'll give you $50,000, but I'm going to cut off both your arms, okay? I doubt if any of us would take $50,000, but the cost would be having no arms. What if somebody says, I will give you $1 million, but I'm going to cut off both your legs at the hips and both your arms? And you'd just be like a stump, okay? You'd have a head, but you wouldn't be able to move. How many of you, raise your hand if you would take $1 million for both your legs and both your arms? Anybody? Okay. Yeah, I got the machetes right over here. So he volunteered, so come on up. How about not $1 million? I will give you $1 billion, but we'll take both your arms and legs. Anybody? $1 billion? Billion? That's a lot of money. You would take $1 billion, and then you walk around with like prosthetic arms and legs, and you'd be a billionaire. So, okay. Well, he's the only victim that we have. So later on, we'll experiment on him and get out the surgical tools. So imagine that most of you would not take $1 billion. That means you're worth at least $1 billion, right? I mean, you're so valuable that you wouldn't take maybe $1 million or $1 billion. That's how much your legs are worth. I was at a restaurant earlier today. I saw a woman being wheeled in, and she just had one leg. Her husband was wheeling her in. And I thought to myself, wow, isn't that amazing? We complain about different things, and yet we're so blessed. I mean, we have two legs. Most of us have two legs, two eyes, two arms. There was another neat quote in here. It said, I was very depressed because I had no shoes, and I saw a man who had no feet. So we should meditate upon this idea that, in a sense, we're all multimillionaires because we have our health, our mind. How much is your eyesight worth? What if somebody says, I'll give you $50,000, but we have to pluck out both your eyeballs? How much is your sight worth? How about your hearing? How much would you take for your hearing? Maybe $10,000? If you added up how much you're worth, I mean, we're all multimillionaires. So that's one of the best ways on how to stop worrying, is focus on your blessings and thank God for your mind, your soul. I mean, your soul is of infinite value. It's worth the blood of God. The blood of Christ died for each one of you. It's of infinite value. As much as your body is worth, your soul is worth infinitely more than that because Christ died for each one of you. Number five, let's not imitate others. Let's find ourselves and be ourselves. Envy is ignorance and imitation is suicide. Okay, this means just be yourself. That's probably one of the best pieces of advice I can give you. Everybody has your own unique gifts and talents and qualities that nobody else has. Every one of you is incredibly unique and gifted and talented. So don't try to imitate others. Just be yourself. Number six, when fate hands us a lemon, let's try to make a lemonade. You've heard that expression before. But there's a lot of wisdom to that sometimes life will give you some lemon. Sometimes it's going to be tough. But always look for the good in every situation. There was this neat story about a woman named Thelma Thompson. During the war, she said, my husband was stationed in an army training camp in the desert. I went there to live, to be near him. I hated the place. I loathed it. I'd never been so miserable. My husband was ordered out on maneuvers in the desert. I was left in a tiny shack alone. The heat was unbearable, 125 degrees, in the shade. Not a soul to talk to, the wind blew incessantly, and all the food I ate and the very air I breathed was filled with sand, sand, sand. I was utterly wretched, so sorry for myself that I wrote to my parents and told them I was giving up and coming back home. I said I couldn't stand it 1 minute longer. I'd rather be in jail. My father answered my letter with just two lines that will always sting in my memory, two lines that completely changed my life. And that's the quote I just gave you. Two men looked out from prison bars. One saw the mud, the other saw the stars. I read those two lines over and over. I was ashamed of myself. I made up my mind I would find out what was good in my present situation. I would look for the stars. I made friends with the natives, and their reaction amazed me. When I showed interest in their weaving and pottery, they gave me presents of their favorite pieces, which they had refused to sell to tourists. I studied the fascinating forms of cactus and yuccas and the Joshua trees. I learned about prairie dogs, watched the desert sunsets, hunted for seashells that had been left there millions of years ago when the sands of the desert had been an ocean floor. What brought about this astonishing change in me? The desert hadn't changed, but I had. I had changed my attitude of mind. And by doing so, I transformed a wretched experience into the most exciting adventure of my life. I was so excited by this new world that I had discovered. I even wrote a book about it, a novel which was published called Bright Ramparts. I had looked out of my self-created prison and found the stars. Number seven, let's forget about our own unhappiness by trying to create a little happiness for others. When you are good to others, you are best to yourself. And the last two ideas on how to avoid worry. See, one of the things that hurts the most is criticism. And rule number one says, unjust criticism is usually a disguised compliment. It often means you have aroused jealousy or envy. Remember that no one ever kicks a dead dog. So if somebody criticizes you, it's probably because they're envious or jealous of the good that you do. If you never want to be criticized, you have to never do anything. But you should never do that. You should always go ahead and do what you know God wants you to do, despite the criticism. And if people criticize, just say, well, they're probably just envious or jealous. Number two, do the very best you can, and then put up your old umbrella and keep the rain of criticism from running down the back of your neck. There's a great saying that I remember a priest when I was growing up in the parish. He always said this. He was an old Italian Monsignor. He said, do your best, and God will do the rest. So keep that as your motto. Just do your best. Do your best with your homework. Do your best with your studies. Do your best with your relationships. Do your best with serving God. Do your best, and God will do the rest. And it says, keep a record of the things that you've done that you can criticize yourself for. And he even recommends, let's even ask people for unbiased, helpful, constructive criticism. See, a humble person will actually ask people for advice. And then lastly, this has to do with six ways to prevent fatigue and worry that saps the person's energy and high spirits. He says, number one, rest before you get tired. Number two, try to relax at your work. Number three, try to relax at home. And he says, try to get organized. Number one, clear your desk of all papers except those relating to the immediate problem at hand. B, do things in order of importance. C, when you face a problem, solve it then and there. And D, learn to organize, deputize, and supervise. So delegate as much as you can and be as organized as you can. So many times people, they get all worried because they have a big stack of stuff on their desk that they have to do. The main thing is put it in an order of importance. Say, these are the A things, the A priorities, the Bs, the Cs, the Ds. Organize that way. And even use like a day timer or some sort of a Palm Pilot and try to organize your day by saying, these are the A priorities. I really have to do these things today. B, I'd like to do these. C, it'd be nice if I could do these. Ds, I can delay or delegate that to somebody else. So look at all the tasks that you have to do and then put them in order of importance and then start with the top priority one first. And then rule five, to present worry and fatigue, put enthusiasm into your work. And number six, it talks about insomnia. people can't sleep, don't worry about it. And what happens is the worrying about it is worse than not sleep, than the insomnia. So these are the really the summary of the truths that are in this book. But I only gave you really the first half of the book. The second half of the book, which if you wanted to, I have extra copies for those of you who are interested, has 31 true stories of how people were able to overcome worry in their own life. And it's amazing, some of the stories, people that had all sorts of financial problems, relationship problems, marriage problems, and yet God was able to pull them through. And I just recommend a couple books for you if you're interested in learning how to overcome worry and anxiety. This definitely has to be on your list to read this. There's paperback copies in the back. And this one, spiritually, and mostly what I've been talking about are just natural things to do, but supernaturally, the three best books that you can read to overcome worry from a spiritual point of view are this one here, Trustful Surrender to Divine Providence by St. Claude de la Colombière. It's a wonderful book about how God is in control of everything and realizing that you can trustful surrender to His divine providence. The other book is called Abandonment to Divine Providence. You can write that one down. Abandonment to Divine Providence by De Caussade, a great spiritual writer. And the last book is True Devotion to Mary. How many of you have made the consecration to the Blessed Mother, to Jesus through Mary, 33-day preparation? Okay, wonderful. So it's such a great book because it tells you how to consecrate yourself to Jesus through Mary. And when you belong to Jesus and the Blessed Mother, once you give yourself completely to them, you don't have to worry about anything because you belong totally to Christ and the Blessed Mother. So what that book does, the True Devotion, it's that you prepare for 33 days, you read certain prayers every day, and read scripture and a few other books a few minutes every day, and then on the last day, on a feast day like the Assumption or the Immaculate Conception, you pick a day and give yourself away. You make the consecration, and you entrust everything to Jesus through the hands of Mary, your past, your present, your future. And once you do this, then your whole life is in God's hands. And it's like renewing your baptismal vows and promises. As Montfort says, you should even wear a chain, maybe around your wrist or maybe like a with a medal, the one you wear with your miraculous medal. So that chain should remind you that you belong completely to Christ through the Blessed Mother, so that you're their property and possession. A priest friend of mine who's just died a couple years ago at the age of 95, he was in a communist prison cell for 3 years in communist China from 1952 to 1955. He said when he was arrested by the communists, he said he was never more at peace because he belonged to Christ and the Blessed Mother. He said even though he was tortured, even though he was in a little prison cell that was this wide and about 5 feet long, he said he never was more at peace. He said after he made the consecration, he promised the Blessed Mother he'd never be worried about anything. So once you make the consecration, you're not allowed to worry about anything. So I would really recommend that to you as my last bit of advice is make a consecration of yourself to Jesus through the hands of our Blessed Mother, and then you always will be at peace, even despite difficulties and trials and tribulations. You'll be given special peace to get through any difficulty if you belong to Jesus and the Blessed Mother. So we have time for maybe a couple questions. So, you know, the best prayer is the Mass, because at Mass, after the Our Father, the priest says, deliver us, Lord, from every evil and grant us peace in our day. In your mercy, keep us free from sin and what? Protect us from all anxiety as we wait in joyful hope for the coming of our Savior, Jesus Christ. So the Mass is a beautiful prayer for peace and for overcoming worry and anxiety. When you receive communion, you can pray to the Lord to help overcome worry and anxiety. But the Mass is great. And the Our Father, the best prayers for this would be the Our Father, the Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, there is nothing I shall want, and verdant pastures, he gives me repose. That's a beautiful prayer. And then the Serenity Prayer. I think those are like the three greatest prayers for peace.
Do you ever, you know, worry about what might happen?
Now, I try not to worry because it's not going to help anything. What you want to do is you want to visualize, okay?
Visualize that
the knife won't go flying into the audience, into this first table. So, okay, what you want to do is, seriously, you do want to visualize doing the show without messing up, without hurting yourself or anybody else. See, a lot of sports, like sports psychology, always talk about visualization. Tiger Woods talks about that a lot. You want to visualize the ball going into the cup. You want to visualize the drive right down the fairway. Visualize. So if you visualize, then hopefully the body will be able to hit the ball in that direction. It'll help a lot more if you do visualize it perfectly. So you do want to visualize not killing anybody, okay, when you do the machetes. There's been a lot of neat stories of, like, this one guy was imprisoned during the Vietnam War, and he was an avid golfer. And every day he played the golf course in his mind. And he was in prison for, like, 2 years. And when he got out, because he had visualized every shot of his favorite course and the perfect swing, the perfect grip, the perfect stance, he shot almost like even par after not playing in 2 years. Some basketball coaches were doing this as well. They had like half the team shoot free throw baskets for an hour, and then another group he put in the classroom and he said, I want you to visualize shooting free throws for 1 hour. Visualize making every shot. Swish, 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 swish. And then he had these guys play against each other, and the guys who visualized were just as good or better than the guys who were practicing. So keep that in mind, that we all move in the direction of our thoughts, in the direction of our mind. So the answer to your question is you're allowed to be concerned about things. Like, I'm concerned that I'll, you know, hurt some of you when I juggle. But you're not supposed to worry about it. And so you have to take necessary action that it doesn't happen, like standing back far enough so that things won't happen. So visualize a successful outcome of your goal. When you go, let's say, to get a job with a boss, when you go into him, visualize a good meeting, visualize a good outcome, visualize a friendly conversation. Those of you in sales, or if you're going to be in sales, you have to visualize knocking on the door, being able to sell those Girl Scout cookies. So try to visualize all those things. Okay, very good. Other questions? Well, I think one of the keys is to try to stay as well organized as you can. And as it says here, try to delegate as much as you can. You know, if you don't want to become too busy like Martha, where Jesus says, Martha, Martha, you're anxious and worried about many things. Mary has chosen the better portion, and it shall not be taken from her. So if a person is very busy, they have to even spend more time in prayer so that they have silence and time with the Lord. Mother Teresa was a good example. She said, if I'm too busy to make one holy hour during the day, I make 2 holy hours during the day. Spend 2 hours in prayer instead of one. So the busier she got, she knew she had to have that time in prayer. John Paul II was the same way. He was traveling all over the world, but he always had an hour of prayer every day with the Lord. Every morning before Mass, 1 hour of prayer. That's what I recommend if you're going to be very busy. And don't just be busy like spinning your wheels. Make sure that your activity is helping you achieve the goal that you want. See, some people major in minor things and minor in major things. So make sure you major in the major things. A lot of times the stuff that people are busy with, they could delegate that to others so that they have more time to do the key things and the things that are of the greatest priority. In business, you have to do a lot of these, you have to determine what is the most valuable use of your time. Some things you should do yourself, others you can get somebody else to do, and some things shouldn't be done at all. Like, everybody should study time management, where you prioritize. Let's say, write down everything you have to do that day, and then prioritize it. This is an A1, this is a B, this is a C, this is a D. So just don't, I think when it's talking about getting busy, I think it's saying, if there's a problem, act upon it, look at the facts, make the best decision, and start acting upon that. But I don't think it's recommending getting overly busy where you get stressed out or burned out. I think try to do your best to major in the most important things. A lot of things just don't need to be done at all. It's a great question.